Welcome to the Engelsberg Ideas podcast, where we interrogate the most important and contentious issues of our time. We take ideas seriously. I'm Paul Lay, Senior Editor at Engelsberg Ideas, and I'm joined by Editor-in-Chief Ian Martin and Deputy Editor Alistair Benn to discuss artificial intelligence, a subject that has been debated for decades, but which has now gained a new prominence thanks to language learning models such as ChatGPT and fears about what such technology might mean for the future of humanity. So, Ian, is this genuinely new territory, or is it a new model for old debates about the relationship between technology and humanity?
What a good question. I'm tempted to say that it may be a bit of both, which sounds like a bit of a cop-out. But of course, we've seen this before with the Industrial Revolution. We have seen these sort of angst-driven debates, which then drove politics in the 19th century and the 20th century and drove political reform because of the fear of what the machines, in those days, industrial machines, would do to working conditions, employment, and eventually unemployment. And I suppose the tech optimist answer is that that resolved itself in quite a positive way, ultimately, in terms of enormous transformation in living standards in the 19th century and 20th century. A lot of angst and political turmoil along the way, to put it mildly. But still, that's the optimistic case. I have to say, reading a lot about this at the moment and trying to immerse myself in these debates, I'm wary of people who claim to have a completely definitive answer at this stage, but I lean towards the very concerned side of the debate, because I sense that this is a little like the creation of the splitting of the atom and the creation of a nuclear weapons was in the 1940s. This is something really very different, which has a capacity to transform society in ways and warfare and politics in ways which, of course, will bring some opportunities with it as well, but which could be very dangerous indeed.
And Alistair, are you an optimist or a pessimist so far as AI goes?
I'm actually, strangely enough, an optimist in the sense that I think that AI, or what we call AI, i.e. large language models like ChatGPT, will reveal precisely those human qualities which are really valuable and will force us into a very deep general and philosophical public debate about those, again, those qualities that make us human.
And do you have examples in mind?
Intuitive reasoning. And large language models like ChatGPT are they've got an incredible level of ingenuity and processing power. But that, to me, doesn't come anywhere near close to a general intelligence or to an artificial intelligence, and actually doesn't, even though it's being it was created by a company called OpenAI, Open Artificial Intelligence, compared to claims about what artificial intelligence is over the long term, I don't think it really matches up. And I think we're very much in danger in general of overplaying machine intelligence and what it can do and impoverishing our general idea of what human beings can do, which I think is still fundamentally very different.
So is the idea that this will make people think more about what it is to be human, that interest in philosophy, religion, search for the sublime increases, and we potentially have more time on our hands to consider that?
That, to me, is the lesson of the history of ideas. And as you described, Ian, the evolution of industrial machines did produce a lot of angst, but it also produced an incredible flowering in responses. Dostoevsky, Nietzsche, you know, are just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the ways in which people tried to explain or give a fuller account of what it meant to be human. And I think the debate on AI over the last 50 years has been very much dominated by scientists, because there's a very high entry point to talking about the complexity of computer models. But the moment that it's emerged, as you know, we're seeing all this proliferation of what AI is and what it can do, that is the moment in which we're going to have a much fuller and more complicated debate, I think.
And talking of that proliferation of ideas, can you tell us or give us some account of what's coming up on the Engelsberg Ideas website this week, which is AI Week after all? Can you give us some sense of the range of articles that we've commissioned?
Well, the tagline for the week is AI Week, Will the Machines Take Over? And the way I thought about it in terms of who I'd approach to and who we'd approach to get to write on this is, let's start with the human and what human beings have thought about machines over time. And by doing that, we can unspool precisely what is mythology and what is really happening. And so we've got a really nice range of historical and cultural takes. We've got Gabby Wood, who wrote a wonderful book on the history of automata, who is writing on chess-playing automata and the kind of debates in the 19th century about, what was machine intelligence. We've got Anna Parker, who's written a fantastic piece on Carol Čapek, who created the word robot, or popularized the word robot in a play called RUR, which is a Czech title, which I'm not going to reproduce. But RUR stands for a robot company, where robots are created, and it's a great piece because it illustrates that a lot of our ideas of machine intelligence are very much invested with fears about what humans can and can't do.
Mm-hmm. What really struck me about that article in particular was the way in which we only really moved by the account of the robots when they actually become human. They are actually human things when they talk about intestines and livers and brains. They're kind of visceral sense that actually they cease being robots, they actually become human.
And we've got Andrew Keane, who's a writer on Silicon Valley, who's done a brilliant piece on ChatGPT and what it actually does and the degree to which some of it, his view anyway, is that some of it is rooted in a kind of story about Silicon Valley, which has been kind of ongoing over the last 50 years, which is very big, bold claims. And we're all sucked up into this kind of grand story about what technology can do for us that over time is revealed to be just that, a story. And he's putting that view.
It's that point in the story, though, what worries me is that this all really started, didn't it, about in mainstream terms about 6 months ago, when there was the great breakthrough on ChatGPT and a storm of interest and debate and discussion. But it struck me at the time and ever since, when all sorts of people keep popping up from different companies resigning and having made an absolute fortune out of developing AI, and then on their way out the door saying, uh-oh, we might have created something that we should all be rather worried about, which strikes me as a bit late in the day. Though, as some other people in those companies have pointed out, there has been a lively debate within companies like Google about the ethical and moral problems that are posed. It seems to me, sorry to think about it journalistically, but it's a bit like those disaster movies, bits where the scientist is trying to tell you something, but isn't really a natural communicator and is trying to convince politicians or the public to take their warning seriously and is growing frustrated that they can't be heard. They're trying to tell us something.
And you've made the historical point that we've been here before in a way. And I think in particularly of the Gilded Age in the United States, when huge corporations took over, just in the way that companies like Google, Microsoft, Uber and various others have done in different technologies now. But there seems to be a significant difference between then and now, is that governments were willing to regulate in the way that they have been reluctant to so far. And I've tried to wonder, think myself of why that might be the case. And I think one of those reasons might be because the rest of the world has turned up. And I think there's China, which is obviously this huge player in AI, which is not a liberal democracy. It's anything but. And for the United States, the world leader in this technology by far, for it to regulate these industries, there is the danger it would then fall behind in the technology,
yep,
and a totalitarian state an opponent, a rival like China or even Russia, could then take control of the reins of this new technology. And that must be a huge factor and a real challenge in terms of regulating these companies and this technology.
You're right, Paul, in that the US now has a systemic rival. At that point, in the America of the 1890s and early 20th century, America was the rising power. It was about to become the world's principal financial power, which it did during the First World War, but that hadn't happened yet. So it just had this restlessness. It's also, it was the Gilded Age and the trust busting that happened constitutes effectively post-Civil War, the creation of the American state. What do I mean by that? What happens is that, I mean, they're doing this regulation is happening. It's born out of social anxiety, the beginnings of the progressive movement, various authors who start to write about industrial processes and the power of a small number of extremely wealthy individuals in railroads and steel and Carnegie. And this process takes about 10, 15, 20 years, captures the public imagination, starts to transform politics, and out of it comes the modern regulatory state. Now, historians still argue about this, about whether that was whether that handicapped America in the 20th century or actually whether it created the conditions for American power and the beginnings of the what became the sort of military-industrial base. Either way, America goes through a process in the 1890s and early 20th century that is transformative, remakes America or makes America, I would argue. Now you're dealing with quite a different situation. That regulatory machine, very powerful, you see how Congress works, is in place and unsure about how to deal with this technology. And I think you've hit the nail absolutely right on the head there by mentioning China, because this time, if you slow that progress, for want of a better word, on technology, the risk is, in fact, the guarantee is that China, Russia, all sorts of autocratic states in the autocratic bloc are just going to carry on doing it and eventually will have it, which raises again the question of the splitting of the atom and the process in the early to mid-1940s, where the American state realized the enormity of what was in prospect and decided to control the process as best as it could, to regulate it, if you will, and to keep it secret. That's kind of impossible now because it's happening out there in the private sector. You can't really just say, right, okay, shut it all down, as some people have suggested, for 6 months, and then the US government is going to turn up and, in concert with other governments, try and plan its way through this when rival powers will be doing their own thing. It is very, very complex and very difficult problem for politicians.
And I was really struck by this. I mean, not only the problem that we have between this in this rival multipolar world where China has risen to such prominence, among others as well, but also the fact that the biggest take-up so far as AI's use in industries within marketing. And we've already got a large element of mistrust within liberal democracies, I think, that has grown. And if we have marketing used as telling lies, we often have words like disruption that is used around AI. But actually, a lot of people just think that's for lies. That's for acting outside of the law. And so not only do we have the danger from outside in terms of China and other totalitarian societies that may be developing AI just as rapidly and just as well as in the West and in the United States in particular, but you also have this erosion of trust in liberal democracy that comes through the lack of control of AI. Yeah. I mean, that seems to me to be a really crucial and worrying factor.
Well, that's the political danger, isn't it? That essentially, that there's something very positive happening in one sense, which is that, well, it depends if you work in customer service or one of those sort of roles at the moment. It seems the early indications are that the public gets better customer service from an AI-driven bot or machine. And there have been examples recently in the UK and in the US of bosses reporting that customer service satisfaction increases when they're dealing with AI, and you don't have to cut down on the time you have to wait on calls. So it's a productivity gain. So that's a positive thing. But the question is, Alistair, and if you're the optimist, is that if you transfer that over to politics, so imagine a situation in which those techniques, well, they're already being applied, but those techniques are supercharged in the next 5 to 10 years and applied to politics and political communication. I ask, you know, what could possibly go wrong?
Oh, I agree. It's utterly terrifying. But I think it will, you know, light is the best disinfectant for this stuff. As you say, there has been a lively debate within sort of the AI community and within tech companies about what this can and can't do. And you know, the more we talk about the use of machines to replicate human-level tasks, which ultimately is, I think, what AI does at the moment, it doesn't produce a general intelligence. It replicates certain capacities. It's a prosthetic. Whether we want to use, you know, it's a tool, and we can use this in whatever way we want. Whether we want to use that tool to corrupt and destroy our own politics, or to immiserate the populace, or, you know, or to impose a kind of techno-scientific view of life on the whole range of people who don't quite agree, or if AI will mirror the kind of political culture of the country, i.e. in China. I mean, I don't know actually what the kind of debate is like in China about the limits of AI use. I'm just not equipped to talk about that. But I do know that in the UK, imposing a kind of techno-scientific view on politics and attempting to make huge swathes of the population effectively redundant and effectively lacking a kind of sense of personality and respect will be an incredibly messy process, and one that will provoke an incredibly lively democratic debate. So I think a lot of this is kind of up for grabs, because it reveals those qualities which are human. It reveals what aspects of us can be approximated to some complex machines.
Yeah.
But it also reveals a hell of a lot of stuff that machines are not programmed to do and are currently not set up to achieve.
Well, we've looked at politics there, and this raises the question, what you're talking about there, Alistair, is the question of culture, about how much a machine can actually replicate human culture, particularly advanced human culture at the highest level. We had an experiment last week where we asked ChatGPT to give us a Milton sonnet, I remember, a sonnet by John Milton, on the subject of loss. And I think we had quite a lot of laughter in the office that day. It certainly wasn't moving, I don't think. And I think it really demonstrated the limitations of it.
Yeah, well, the poem was really interesting because it reproduced in just different phrases one central idea, almost a pastiche of Miltonian writing. This sort of, just this idea of gloom-ladenness, and then put into whatever kind of verse. So that is, again, really interesting to me. It revealed precisely what is interesting about Milton and what is uninteresting about what machine can do with Milton, which is that it generally takes an idea, and again, a pastiche about a thing, and then it attempts to replicate it. Now, that is very, very far away from the kind of negative capability, as Keats called it, or the kind of abductive reasoning. There's all kinds of words for human analytical abilities that don't quite capture what it is, but sort of get there. It's very far away from that quality, which is a kind of obscure process and to do with the mind and to do with the individual, and a process that we still struggle to describe. I mean, what would it mean, for example, for a machine intelligence to have an id or a superego or an unconscious? Again, these are just words that we use to describe qualities of mind, but again, are just imperfect words. It's not like the mind is not like the kidney. Well, if we described all of it physiologically, we'd sort of work out what it did. The mind is something, it's mind and matter. To me, the large language models are very impressive. They have an incredible amount of ingenuity. They've got this huge swathe of big data available to them, but they do not even come, they're so far away from what we generally accept to be human intelligence as to be on a different level. But that is still dangerous.
Yeah.
And still, if you misapply that and start using it for all kinds of things where it can probably do them in an ingenious way, we will sap the very qualities that make us human. We will reduce our capabilities.
I agree with you, or rather I'd like to agree with you. And there is a case for being hopeful. And I can envisage a scenario in which people advertise and boast and are proud of the fact that something is made by a human being, that that becomes, for want of a better phrase, a selling point. And that's all positive. You know, this book, this real printed thing, this magazine, you know, magazines I think will probably have a comeback, stuff which is physical and has a feeling of closure. And it's not like the internet or the internet plus AI, which just goes and rolls on forever, endless, this endless kind of doom loop. So all of those human activities, painting, art, theatre, potentially, though theatre's got some major problems, opera, you can see how that thrives. But that's not where my main concern is. My main concern is in the sort of practical defence and civil society space, where if you then add in quantum computing, we've been talking about AI, quantum, which is a term not really understood, widely understood, and not really cracked, but seems to be coming. Now, what does it mean? It just means computing on a vastly different scale, just the number of computations that can be made. And the advocates of quantum computing are sometimes dismissed by others as advocating hype. But if that comes true in the next 20 years and it fuses with AI, and think how far AI itself will have got by then, we can't imagine. I'd like to say that the effects would be benign, but the scale, the potential of the scale of what's possible, it then becomes quite terrifying. If you think of automation of human systems like water supply, delivery, food manufacture, all of the things which are essentially the atmosphere, nuclear weapons, defense, all of that stuff, civil protection, if you add in AI plus quantum and add 20 to 30 years, I hope that the outcome is benign, but human history tells us we should be very, very careful.
Though it's also likely to be messy rather than one or the other, I would have thought.
Yeah.
It's interesting what you said about the real. I was thinking of W.H. Auden's doggerel for a senior citizen earlier, in which he says something like, I feel most at home with what is real. And there's a flawed nature to this. This is going back to your points about culture, I suppose, Alistair, is that one of the things that really strikes me about genuine human creativity is the way in which it often depends upon misunderstandings and mistakes in order to generate new ideas, new progressive ideas, however we may term that. And yet the AI, even if it is boosted by quantum computing, is essentially always seeking a perfect state. And so you seem to be suggesting, Alistair, that it could not at any point, and I'd be sympathetic to this argument, is replicate human genius, and yet it can do a lot of the mediocre, everyday things that human beings do. And there seems to me a danger there in the dynamic between those everyday things and that only genius can perform.
But what I would say to that is that I think we still don't really, it would be very, very difficult to imagine a machine that can do those kinds of super genius things, because we ourselves do not really understand how those things happen. I think it is ineffable and mysterious. So I just don't understand how a machine, which is really set up, it's a computer intelligence and is really set up for specific reasons and has specific biases, would suddenly emerge with sophisticated enough answers to questions that we ourselves don't have good answers to about human intelligence, even with that. If you think of the processing power of the human mind, it is vastly outstrips the processing power of any computer.
But it doesn't need to, does it? If you think of George Dyson's book on Turing's cathedral, which isn't really about Turing, but has its roots in Turing's ideas and then explains the calculations that were made, you know, fabulous, really dense but interesting book, the calculations that were required for the bomb. And you don't need to reach the singularity, which some people think is possible. That's the point at which effectively the machines take over. Just machines which are vastly more powerful than we can imagine need to be in the control of someone who's ultimately evil or power hungry or autocratic or totalitarian. And at that point, you just have to hope that democracies remain, hold their sort of integrity and remain inventive and can outwit autocrats. But it creates that possibility. I suppose the other thing which we haven't talked about is the potential for mass middle-class unemployment. And you can see what automation is already doing in warehouses and sort of zero-hours contracts, is a UK term, but the way in which it's changing employment and bringing some extraordinary gains to consumers in terms of how they shop and spend their time. But it seems to be as though AI, not quantum this time, but AI is going to just cut through huge numbers of industries which are dominated by the middle classes in the West. Law, accountancy. I mean, it'll be good for some of those people working in those industries now because they'll need smaller teams, but will they be hiring again in the future? And don't we know from the history of the last couple of hundred years that a disaffected middle class is the most politically dangerous force ultimately, because the middle class is when they feel dispossessed or elements of them feel dispossessed, have a tendency to extreme political violence, thinking Mao, China, thinking Lenin, plenty of other examples.
Thinking Hitler.
Yeah, precisely. The disappointed person who feels he felt he was an artist and he'd been overlooked and felt angry then about the world, and look what resulted.
But, and this is to conclude, it seems to me, that we are thinking that the real menace of these machines, of AI, of quantum computing, everything, is not that, it's not their vast intelligence, it's not their genius or anything like that that is in the realms of science fiction. It's actually their banality. It's the way in which they can reorder a world in rather banal terms. And at a time when it seems as though democracy's in retreat, that's a real worry, or at least being contested on a large scale with, for example, as we've said over and over again, the rise of China. That seems to me to be the greatest danger that there is there. Yeah. It's political more than anything else.
Yeah, and there's a real tension there, a difficulty. I wouldn't normally sympathize with politicians, but the speed at which this is happening, you overlay that onto democratic electoral cycles. They have so much else to deal with, and they're trying to process this enormous, enormous change and struggling to deal with it. One advantage that the democracies have, one positive note, is that this poses even more complex challenges for autocrats and totalitarians. And if we think of China now as essentially a totalitarian state with access to technology that Mao could never have dreamed of, so in that sense it's more dangerous, but it's potentially more difficult for a totalitarian or an autocrat to control. And it may embolden democratic forces and those who believe in freedom, and may give them scope for fighting back. But it's going to be interesting.
Interesting times indeed. Well, thank you, Ian. And thank you, Alistair. And you can catch up with all of these articles on www.engelsbergideas.com. Thank you.